My name is Ethan Van Gordon, and today I'm speaking with Eric Van Gordon. We are conducting this interview as part of the IUP Oral History Program's Coronavirus Collection. We are conducting our interview in person. Thank you for joining me today. So please begin by spelling your first and last name.
First name is Eric, E-R-I-C. Last name is Van Gordon, that's capital V-A-N, and a space, and capital G-O-R-D-E-N.
So I'll have us begin by just having you tell me where you're from, describe your family a little bit, and where you currently live.
Yeah, I'm from a small town in Pennsylvania called Mountaintop, Pennsylvania. I moved there when I was in high school and met my wife, well, now wife there, but we dated all through high school, went off to college separately, got married after college, had a couple kids, moved back because we decided it was a good place to raise kids, and we still live there now, all these years later, and we've been there, I don't know, 13, 14 years. So yeah, still live in Mountaintop, PA right now.
Mm-hmm. So where did you go to school, and what kind of degrees do you have?
So I went to high school in Mountaintop, a high school called Crestwood High School, where my kids also all go or went. And then after that, I went on to Penn State for a couple years, transferred to Albright College, where I graduated with a bachelor's degree in English. Then I went to Bucknell University, and I got a master's degree in English as well a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. And so, as a result of your schooling, what do you do for a living now, and how long have you worked in your field?
Yeah, my field's a bit of a surprise. When I went to college, I thought I'd end up being an English professor through a whole bunch of different circumstances. I actually currently am a product manager for an internet company focused on library services. So research and library services that are used typically at universities, public libraries, both in the US and all around the world. So I work in technology, but I'm a manager. I'm not a programmer. I'm not the guy doing the code, but I run those sorts of teams. Work a lot with our customers, our university customers, and our public library customers to help figure out what kind of products they need to serve patrons and to continue to move forward. And that's what I do. I've done it since the late 90s, so quite a long time now.
So obviously, especially the current events that have been going around, mm-hmm. Everyone's been impacted by COVID-19 pandemic. Mm-hmm. When and how did you first become aware of the COVID-19 outbreak? What was your reaction when you first heard about this outbreak?
It was funny because I remember reading a newspaper article sometime last year about, you know, this 100-year pandemic and you know, that we should expect one as a world. And it was one of these sort of warning articles. And I remember, I don't know, it was the week probably after the Super Bowl. So, you know, late February, early March, where I first heard something in the news about this thing in China going on and, you know, and people seeming concerned. But I didn't think a ton of it because you would hear those things from time to time, right? And even if something, you know, SARS or one of those things popped up, it always seemed to be kind of, you know, tamped down pretty quickly. So I think I heard about it probably end of February, that first week of March, where I started to think about it at all. And not even as something to worry about, but just as something that seemed, you know, real. The word, you know, COVID, Corona. Like, that was the first time I probably heard that.
Mm-hmm. So once you became aware of this, what was your first direct experience with COVID-19?
My first direct experience was around that, about a week after. And this moved really fast. You have to remember, like, now that we're, you know, months into this, it feels like we've been doing this a long time. But the early days and weeks of this, what was, I still think feels shocking is how quickly it went from, like, that first knowledge I was talking about, where you first heard about it, to your life was impacted. And I'll tell you the first thing in my life that was actually impacted. I was supposed to get on an airplane and go to a conference in Texas. The second week of March, second week of March, somewhere in that time frame. And I can remember within days of first hearing about this thing, that first mention, to the end of that week, calling my boss at the time and saying, I don't think I should do this. But nothing had been canceled yet. The conference wasn't canceled. It started to feel unsafe. And I traveled enough that I just thought, I don't really want to be on two airplanes each way, traveling all across the country to show up. You know what I mean? It felt dangerous. And I let her know that I was canceling. And her response was, well, whatever you think is best for you and your family. Like, at that point, it was very much your own decision. But that was the first, and I made the decision not to go. That was the first thing I did that reflected that things were not normal.
Do you remember what your colleagues' reactions were?
Like I said, I remember having the conversation with my wife, like, I'm going to tell them I'm not doing this. And I felt kind of like, I felt bad. Like, maybe I was doing something wrong, or maybe I was, you know, like, exhibiting some kind of, like, you know, fear that you were, like, well, it's no big deal, again, because typically it's no big deal. I can remember, though, I mean, again, in the speed of things, by the time, this was like a Thursday or Friday that I told her I wasn't going, by the time we got back to work on Monday, things were legitimately shutting down. So I didn't have to feel too bad too long. Maybe I had a weekend where I was like, oh, did I do the right thing? But by Monday, I had absolutely done the right thing. That's how fast sort of the escalation of this happened, days, within days and hours. So, you know, people by that point, when you would tell them, I almost went on a trip, they're like, ooh, you almost got on an airplane, you know? That was, so by the time it became a thing, I was like, oh, I made the right call for sure. So
with the speed of this outbreak, obviously a lot of people were not prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Have you or anyone you know tested positive for COVID-19? And in what ways do you think testing positive for the virus would affect your life personally?
Yeah, so not somebody in my, like, who I see every day, but a colleague of mine, a former colleague of mine, who's really active on Facebook, he started exhibiting symptoms and talking about it on his Facebook timeline really early on in the early days of this. And he would share every day his updates of just how he was feeling. And at first he didn't even know what it was. He just knew he felt really bad. And, you know, again, around the same time these announcements were coming out, but he had been traveling up and down I-95. His father was very sick. And so he was spending time in hospitals, and he was stopping a lot and eating out. You know, he was just, you know, doing normal things you would do if you lived in, he lives in North Carolina and his father lives up in Southern Pennsylvania, traveling back and forth to try to see him in the hospital and do those things. And he came home from one of those trips and he started to, COVID symptoms. And then he started posting, and then he couldn't get a test. I mean, this, you know, and then he couldn't. So you kind of, you know, every day and several times a day, you know, you would log on and you would try to, you'd go to Facebook and like, okay, you know, what's going on with this guy? And then he had the fevers, and then he locked himself in his bedroom for 2 weeks, and he was posting just, you know, in isolation in his house with his family. And so you just kind of went on this ride with him. And then he started feeling really bad, and then he had to go to the doctor, and then he came home, you know. And so you would kind of, for me anyway, that was like, that's the most personal it got, because one, I knew him, he's the same age, you know, not terribly old. And at that point, and even now, I think you hear, oh, it's just old people, which, you know, not necessarily the case. That's part of the scare, right? Is you don't know how you would react. So I just kind of, having seen what he was going through, and then, you know, knowing, like, how do I think it would impact me personally, beyond, you know, sympathy and empathy for somebody else, you try to put yourself in that position. Say, okay, if you got it in your home, where would you go? How would you now have to live within your own home to protect the family that's there, because now everyone's there, right? So it's not like you could just go somewhere else. You know, everyone is in that same place. And yeah, we had, you know, we certainly had a lot of, you know, little bumps along the way. That for me was like the thing that made it real, though, to see somebody else who was very open about it in the very early days of it, when it really felt scary in ways that I don't think it feels now, because maybe it just feels normal, but to see that was really like, oh man, you know, to see what he had to go through was something else.
I can imagine. So you've never tested positive, you've never caught this virus. Aside from that, how has this pandemic affected you personally? Like, has it had any impact on your relationship with family or friends?
Yeah, we've had, I mean, my whole family's under one roof right now, you know, with two college-age sons and my high school-age daughter and my wife and myself. You know, we're all living, working, schooling from home, like everyone is, but, and we get along. But that's, it's not been without bumps. Again, I'll go back to the early days of this when things seemed very fearful. My younger son went fishing, and he told me he was by himself. And I happened to be out for a lunchtime run that I would do just to get some fresh air and just to get out of the house, and I noticed that he was with some friends. And I went towards him, and I just kind of said to him, well, now what are we, you know, this was back when, you know, like everybody was fiercely quarantining and you had this bubble and, you know, it felt really dangerous to go outside of that bubble. And I felt like, well, I said to him, well, how are we supposed to let you back in the house? Like, and so he legitimately like wasn't going to come home. He was going to like, I don't know, live in a park or something, but we, you know, I had to go get him and calm him down. So we've had those moments where our own stresses boiled over our own, you know, you didn't know. And it felt like a movie. It felt literally like, you know, some zombie apocalypse where you weren't sure what you were letting in when you brought your groceries in and rubbing everything down. So your behaviors and your behaviors to each other, you didn't know. And so we were good as long as you were in your bubble. And every once in a while something would go a little bit sideways. And then your patience would just be shot. So we've had to learn that a few times.
Did your younger son catch the virus?
No, not as far as we know. No, he didn't. No, he didn't.
So earlier we talked a little bit about your career and how long you've been involved in
yep.
your line of work. How has the pandemic impacted your career?
It's completely changed my career because it cost me my job. The companies I work for work with libraries, work with institutions that are budget dependent. And, you know, the fact that the college students like yourself are here and not at school means that the universities you attend aren't getting the revenues that they did. And a lot of those revenues from the housing and the supplemental things that you pay, annoying as though they may be, that's what funds the library and the other things that happen at the institution beyond just purely classroom work. So the company I worked for was anticipating budget issues, and they did their largest layoffs in the company's history, and I happened to be one of them. And so to be my age, middle of a pandemic, with, again, your entire family, two college-age kids, to lose your job was the height of, already stressful, the height of that stress. Just right in the middle of the worst thing, worst time in history to lose your job, in the worst circumstances, to be in that world. And, you know, one morning you wake up and have your job, and an hour into it, you get a phone call and you're just done. Because of this. So so everything, it changed, it, you know, completely changed the trajectory of what I do, or at least who I do it for. So I did get another job, you know, fairly quickly, actually. So there's good. I mean, there's good within that, but that's still cumulative stress and absolute change. You know, your life looks different absolutely as a career because of it. No question. Huge impact. Huge.
It's interesting. You work with university libraries, and a lot of the resources these libraries offer, they offer online resources for students to be able to, you know, get the books they need or
mm-hmm.
articles they need or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that working for a company that does that, you would lose your job. One would assume that you would have more need for more time, more people.
Yeah.
So
you're absolutely correct. And so this points out something else that I think about when, you know, I don't know if it's economic, if it's company based. I think a lot of companies, when we look back on this time, well, you know, some of this shows what is important in our society, in capitalism and companies, where, you know, keeping the budget right took precedence over taking care of the people. you know, I get that these companies are a business and they need to hit their numbers or whatever that thing is, but some companies negotiate that one way, you know, executives taking cuts, everyone at the company taking smaller salary, you know, taking something off of them to do for the greater good. And other companies just want to hit that bottom line. So I guess what I'm saying is I think some companies use this as an excuse to improve their bottom line and let people go who may not have been the cheapest, may not have been whatever, just and then say, oh yes, but it's due to this. I'm not saying that was necessarily the case with me, but I think it's made it convenient for some companies to behave less than stellar towards their employees. Well, you know, what are their obligations of an employer to its people? And these moments stress that a bit. And I think you can see that if you look around how some of these companies have responded. They're still multi-billion dollar organizations that have just laid off thousands of people, right? All for the sake of some numbers. And I get it. I understand it's real, but the implications of that are even larger. So I don't know. It is ironic, though, for my case that's what it is. It goes back to the way those things. To talk a little about the library and the academic space, it's been that's a stressed industry anyway. Electronic resources are a lot cheaper and than a lot of the print resources. So again, if you go that direction and you're a librarian, now they don't need you because they don't need a building. But the expertise that you bring to helping a student conduct research, to directing them to resources to help them, you know, even with a great search engine, you don't get that same level of response. So yes, it's cheaper and easier in many ways, but there's larger processes at play there that require people and intervention and some of that work, or at least they have historically done that. Again, will it ever be the same? I'm not sure.
So that brings me to my next question. You mentioned that this is a very, university libraries are very stressed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these responses have maybe not been the most moral thing to do in terms mm-hmm. of the response. Do you think that your line of work will be forever changed because of this pandemic?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, what I do, the library space, let's be very specific, the library space for both the academic, you know, folks, the universities and public libraries will never be the same. You know, and that's sad. But it's also, they said, those were industries under stress and ready for disruption anyway. I think that they thought the disruption, they being the university libraries and even public libraries, and I'll talk about them a little bit separately, thought they would be their own disruptors. They would find their next way to engage. So, example, from a university library, you know, being less dependent on kids sitting at desks, walking through stacks to find a book, versus creating common spaces where you can meet and study together collectively. Again, go back to those e-resources you mentioned, making those known and available, attaching the library resources to curriculum in the classroom. So when you're in a particular class, your professors and you understand what resources you have, you don't have to hunt so much for them. You know, really making the library part of the university experience in a way that it hasn't. That's gonna have to accelerate. And you'll see some of those things where, you know, the way the university libraries are connecting to like edX courses and short form courses and things that people are trying to fill gaps to get new jobs. And, you know, again, all the stuff this has changed. Yeah, university library is going to have to change to address that. It will not be the same. In the public space, the public libraries, you know, in your community, when those buildings close, you know, and you can't go check out your five books, there's been a few things. One is, you know, they're like every restaurant, they're doing curbside pickup for physical items. Also, those e-resources come back, being able to go and get an e-book from your local library, those things. But beyond that, the role of the library, how it gets funded, what value it has, needs to change. They're going to have to prove out those public libraries that they actually matter to a community, that the communities should continue to pay for that in their taxes. And that's going to be helping people get training and jobs and awareness and events. And I even think, you know, helping like local startups find a place to work and to gather and to get their ideas funded and known. Libraries, if they want to survive, they're going to have to find new business models beyond just having stacks of books for people. Because, you know, Netflix exists. Kindle exists, that the people, it's very easy to get the resources you want. So the library's got to do something different, both academically and in publics. Yeah, it'll never be the same.
So in the long run, these changes that have resulted because of this pandemic, do you think they'll be beneficial or detrimental? Do you think it's just the way it is?
I'm a positive person by and large, and I think two things. I think again, from an industry perspective, I'll talk personally as well. I think they'll be beneficial. Again, those are industries that needed to change. There are lots of things that needed to change, and sometimes change. We always want to negotiate the change in our lives. We think we want to be the reason that change happens, and in reality, that's not actually how things work. Usually, the changes that you look back on and go, "Wow, that made happened out of something terrible or horrible or difficult," and I think this is that moment for a lot of things. So it's how you respond to them. If those industries and those sectors can respond with improvements and revisions, then in long term, that can be a good thing. Personally, in my own life, beyond work, and beyond our political climate, I mean, there's a collective sense of, like, you just want to be able to appreciate what you once thought was normal. To be able to go somewhere and sit down and have dinner and not be concerned at all. To wake up on a day, I mean, the thing that I personally miss is, like, there's never a day where you don't have some sort of needing to think about that, where you can just be like, oh, I'm going to go do something on Saturday and it's just going to be fun, right? Like, it's just going to be, you can just be in your head. It's impossible, not even very hard. It's impossible to go through a day now where you can be that way. I can't. You have, there's just something always lurking, and that is a collective exhaustion. I just think, I can't wait for the day when that collective exhaustion, that thing is not in your head. When you're like, oh, you're going to plan a vacation and just go. Like, that seems like crazy. And that used to feel just so normal. So I think collectively, if we as a country, a people, a world, whatever, that sort of that big, that sigh of relief, right? That is what I'm waiting for, that thing.
So you mentioned collective exhaustion, and you mentioned our country,
yep,
which very much segues into my next question for you, which is, what is your opinion of the United States' handling of the COVID-19 pandemic? Do you think there are things we could have done better to lessen the number of cases in the United States?
I don't think there's much more we could have done wrong. I think that, like, we when I go back to those early days and I go back to the sense of confusion that we had as a country, and for all the reasons that, for political reasons and social reasons, whatever they are, the thing that disappoints me most is our inability as a country to just have empathy for somebody else. I've heard over and over again, my rights, my constitutional rights, this me, mine mentality. And not one moment thinking about someone else, that some of these things we've been asked to do, whether it's, stay home, wear a mask, all that stuff that seems so politicized, didn't need to be politicized. When you looked at how other countries responded to this, just a sense for someone else. Think about someone else for one second. Even if you're not worried, it's not about you. Not everything is about you. And we couldn't seem as a nation to, on either side in some ways, to really get that. That's disappointing. I think it's weak. I just think it's like, if that's how we had responded as a nation during, like, other crises in this country, like World War II, I don't know, man. I don't like what it says about this generation of this country. It just doesn't say something. It's not who we are or who I thought we were. So it's disappointing, and it didn't have to be disappointing. And hundreds of thousands of people have died because of that. There's real consequences for that. It's not hypothetical. And you can just look at the numbers around the globe to bear it out. I mean, it's not even, I don't even know how it can be a debate. So, yeah, couldn't have done worse.
I do agree with you. It is, I think the handling has been less than stellar as well. It has been disappointing, as you say. Are you optimistic about the chances of an effective vaccine being produced in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, I, to be a positive person, I am. Because again, I want that normal, whatever that means. You know, I have that hopeful, positive attitude about it. I mean, it needs to be done right. It needs to not be a political ploy. It needs to be medically driven, right? I mean, all the things that, it needs to be sane. I mean, I think if I look around too, at the same time, right now where we are in this, you know, mid-October, you know, I was reading an article about how, you know, the medical community is learning how to respond to people who have this better treatments, better things. So I'm not saying the vaccine is, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, yes, we need that. But even just, you know, if we can learn and have confidence in how we handle it, if you do get it, just those, you know, the really concrete, conscious steps, you know, I don't mind getting a cold, right? You know, because chances are I'm not going to die from the cold. Now, people die from stuff all the time. So, you know, I mean, so if we can just get to a place where we know there's a viable treatment for 99% of people, right? It's not 100%. I think our perspectives will change. I think our ability to feel normal will change. So I'll take both of those things. You know what I mean? Time will bring both of them, and hopefully a vaccine soon. But to just rush something out there that may not be effective or may do something worse, given what we know medically about how vaccines behave and interact with your body, I don't know. I'd rather them be a little bit careful, you know, and be a little bit smart while they're understanding how to treat this if you do get it. I mean, I just, that's where I'm at. Yes, I think it's important, but I think the worst thing would be to think we got something and then have it do a whole bunch of bad stuff and throw everybody back into chaos.
It's definitely something that should not be rushed.
Yeah.
I agree. So earlier you mentioned you felt a sense of a lack of empathy among many Americans. Has this pandemic impacted your perspective on American society?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's disappointed me. I think because of the stresses of it, the collective stress of it, I don't think it's a coincidence that we've had the racial anxieties, you know, all the things that have come up along the way here while this is happening. They're not disconnected, right? These things are connected. The fuses are short. They become shorter. People's response to things has become more polarized, right? You just can't stand in the middle and sort of not have an opinion anymore. You've been forced to a side. People have been forced to a side. So I think it's all of that. It's just, it's painful right now. And we need to get past this, you know. There's a better way forward. So I don't know if I answered your question there.
No, it does. Do you feel that this has that lack of empathy and that this sense of disappointment, does this have anything to do with perhaps a lack of leadership?
Yeah, well, leadership implies leadership. Like, you actually have somebody who's leading by an example, setting a tone. I think, you know, in my estimation, the role of the president and that particular office is to paint a picture for all Americans of us being at our best. Or at least, you don't have to agree politically with somebody, but just modeling what it is to be a citizen, what it is to again, back to that empathy and collective good. And that's what this country's founded on, frankly. To have someone in power who's so egocentric that can't model empathy, is not even capable of modeling empathy, is only capable of modeling some egotism. It exacerbates it. It gives people the ability to, and then it draws out in people those things, those nasty little things that people think is made okay. It validates some of that, the darker pieces of our society. So what is not okay, but silent becomes not okay and very, very public because it's made okay. And I think our government right now has not only it's legitimized that sort of way of thinking, which is dangerous, it's given it a focal point in that leader and in that movement. It's a movement, right? It's got brands, it's got colors, it's a thing. That's really dangerous in my mind. That's where things get scary. Because again, fear, right? You know, we were living in this very fear-driven society. A lot of those things that I think that the people who follow that leader and that movement are driven by fear. Fear of losing their what they perceive as some sense of control that they once had in the society and their whatever. But it's fueled by fear. And when you have somebody who can take people's fear and turn it into some sort of righteous indignation and anger, and then can then mirror it back to them, right? That your fear and these hateful things you think are okay, and I'm going to help you fix that. And other, you know, let's have there's an other. There's another person out there. There's another group out there. There's another race out there, and they're coming for you. That fear and stoking that fear. Historically, not just in our country, but in our world, when a leader behaves that way, things go really, really bad.
I very much agree with your perspective on a lot of that. So getting away from the bigger picture, mm-hmm. Kind of going back to your personal experiences with all of this, what were your expectations upon entering lockdown, quarantine, when this first began?
Well, we were trying really hard. Like I said, we had this, you know, pretty ruthless bubble. Like, you know, and we're lucky where we live. We have enough land. We have a big enough house. I work from home anyway. So my expectations were, it was nice to have all the college kids home. It really, like in some ways, that was time we didn't think we would have. So that was kind of there's aspects of this that are enjoyable in a kind of perverse way because we've had time with our kids we didn't expect to have. We've done things in the yard, you know, your life got really small and we're actually pretty good at that. You know, it's not like we live in some apartment in a city and we didn't have those problems. I can't even imagine what that felt like. We could go outside here and have some space. We could, you know, we could, as long as you stayed in your bubble, you know, when you got home and you cleaned your groceries and you ran and took a shower like you'd been in some sort of nuclear fallout, once you got through that and you were back in your bubble and things were okay and your cable was working and your electric was cool, as long as those things were intact, you were living in society. I think we had one power outage early on and it felt like doomsday instantly, you know, like, you went, oh no. So as long as those few things you had were intact, you know, quarantine was, it was weird. You kept thinking, well, this isn't going to last. And then it just kept going. And, but yeah, it was that. It wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it was definitely, you wanted your bubble. Don't come in my bubble. Just stay out there. Wipe the groceries down. Wipe, you know, the package got delivered. I left the mail out there for 3 days. You know, don't bring the newspaper in. Just like stop. I stopped getting it because I didn't want to touch it. You know, that kind of stuff. You didn't know, so you just kind of, you just stayed home.
The importance of having internet, I think, was also.
You had a few things that seemed very critical.
Yes. So you kind of touched on this. I'll ask you just to go maybe a little more into it. What was life like for you and your family? During quarantine, was there anything that you were looking forward to that you missed out on because of the pandemic and having to quarantine?
Like I said, having the kids at home was a good thing. We had a summer full of activities, you know, going to concerts, going to baseball games, you know, just stuff that we wanted to go do, and all of it got canceled. I mean, not by us, but by the events of the world. So just those little joys, the idea of a weekend, the idea of, oh, we have this thing we're going to do, missing that stuff, you know, going out to dinner on a Friday, just, you know, like you work, just the sense of you've earned some some other thing or something to look forward to. That was the biggest, that's the biggest hit we took, I think. There was a summer full of stuff that we had planned. Not necessarily a big vacation, but just, you know, a golf outing to go see a thing and go to a concert. Just that stuff, to not have that was disappointing. I mean, we got over it because we understood why, but when I think back now, it's probably more disappointing in hindsight than it was then. Then it just felt like, yeah, you can't do that. Now it's like, oh, shoot, we didn't get to do that. So, yeah, just sad.
You feel that you and your family get along well together? And
we do. We've had some dinner conversations. Yeah, we do. No one's had a knockdown drag out, although there are moments, there have been moments where, not all of us collectively, but, you know, we will test each other's patience every once in a while. Somebody will say something, and somebody will respond, and somebody will take what they said the wrong. Yeah, just you know, five people being in a house day in and day out for the most part for 7 months, you're going to have some conversations. Somebody will say something, and then somebody's stomping off to a room for a couple hours just to clear their head.
Did you pick up any hobbies during quarantine? If so, what are they, and how did you get into them?
I was running before quarantine, a couple of months before I started back running. Those daily runs became like almost religious in importance to me. One, being outside, though there were moments when you see somebody coming the other way and everybody would like freak out and run to the opposite side of the road. So even then you weren't completely away from it. Like you were reminded, but we live in an area where there's not a lot of people. So it wasn't like you were going to get sick. Just you felt like something was, kind of get away from me. But that became important, really important. To go out and be able to do that and kind of clear your head was important. We started the old hobbies, like getting slot cars out, setting up things we hadn't done in years. Just little things. My kids and I started writing a script for a screenplay, kind of stuff. Just those sorts of things where you're like, you know, I have an interest in this. I'm thinking about this. And like, well, let's just do something, you know? Those kind of things. Early days on, we were outside, we rebuilt our entire patio. So we did... Everyone seemed to do that too, by the way. There was like this collective, I'm going to fix up junk outside my house. I think Lowe's was making millions of dollars, you know, a week just in people fixing junk. They'd probably been like that for years. And all of a sudden it became really important to get your lawn nicer, make a wall or something. Everyone kind of all did the same thing there. But those hobbies became just distractions. Watching a lot of movies, everyone did that. You know, but for me, it was just those few things. Just really, the running was a big one, though. It still is. Just getting your head right.
Yeah, it's interesting how each person kind of finds their own way of distracting themselves during all this, whether it's yard work or running or writing a screenplay or what have you.
Yep.
Is there anything in particular that you miss about life before the whole pandemic occurred? And do you think that there's any possibility for things to go back to the way they were?
This is the thing that I miss the most, and I'll put it in my hope, I won the lottery kind of terms. Like, our family and I will talk about going to Disney World, right? And like, oh, hey, one day we want to go back to Disney, and I mean that's an expensive vacation. It's like we did that a few years ago, but you think, okay. Like, yes, I always want to think, I would love to go do that. But I want to go do it normally. I don't want to wear a mask and stand 6 feet apart. And I don't want to have to go there and think about this, right? Because when you go to Disney, if anyone's ever been, you know, the idea there is you're not in your normal world. The most important thing is, can I get a fast pass to that ride, right? And that's the experience you want to have. Like, you want to have that immersive experience. And like I was saying, it's impossible to have an immersive moment in something that isn't tinged by this right now. So the thing I like just wish for most, and it can be a Disney thing, but that feeling of, I no longer have to think about this thing. That to me is like, when that day, do I think that'll happen? Yeah, I do. And I hope, the second half of your question, that when that happens for the world, that we as a, it's bigger than the nation, right? This is an American thing. This isn't, you know, none of this is, that there's an appreciation, an authentic sort of deep breath appreciation for that, for the everyday, for that normal. And we don't take it for granted. I mean, I fear that we will, you know, but for me personally, like, to be able to have that feeling and appreciate that feeling and then actually maybe go do one of those things and stand in that moment and go, oh, this is so nice. Can you remember when we never thought we could do this? Like, to have that, to say this is past. Huge. And I think as a world, like, I like, that makes me smile to think, like, oh, if the world could do that, if we could be in that moment, how great the next 10 years could be. Do you know what I mean? What that could mean, just that collective, like, appreciation for things, how cool that would be. So that's my rosy glasses view of things.
So if that was if that were to play out and things go back to normal, before all this occurred, would you be willing to hop on a plane right away? Would you continue to wear a mask, or would you not wear a mask any longer?
I think it depends. I think if there was a vaccine where we knew with confidence that it was effective, I would get on a plane for sure. I mean, I would get on a plane, you know. Would I wear a mask? You know, again, if we have a vaccine and people and we and, you know, and it's been distributed and people have taken it and we are, yeah, I would leave the mask in the bag. Like, would I have it with me? Probably. I'm not sure at this point what it would mean not to. I mean, if you think back before the pandemic, there's parts of the world and society where being out in public like that is, or at least traveling through airports and airlines is normal. Some of that might be the case, you know, for a long time or forever. I don't know. I think there's a real chance. I mean, I do think the vaccine will happen, like I said earlier, but I think there's also, you know, with great medical care, with the ability to see this as just something, you know, here, you get these, you take these pills and you're going to feel crappy for a couple of weeks, but you're going to be all right. I'd be careful and wash my hands and do some best behaviors, but if I knew, like, yeah, if you get this, you're going to get treatment, I mean, you know, I would travel. I've got friends who travel now. I don't know that I'd be thrilled about it, but what would get me through now is the fact that not a lot of people are. but if, you know, said, hey, everybody who used to travel and cram onto a plane is going to do it right now, I'm not going anywhere. I'll drive. Thank you. See you there.
Is there anything else you would like to share with me that I have not asked you today?
Well, no. I mean, I think that the biggest thing for me is just, you know, trying to put all of this in some perspective, and just realizing how fragile our society is, you know? I mean, I think if you had sat back in February of last year, early February, and all the things you had planned, all the things you thought were important, all the things you thought you were going to do, if you in that moment knew that 1 month later, not a single one of those things was going to work the way it was working in that moment, and that was going to happen globally, not in a town, not in a city, not in a country, not over somewhere else, but that it was legitimately going to be in your life and there was nowhere to go to get out of it, you would want panic beyond your brain couldn't handle it. If that dumped on, what you know now, you knew then in a moment was the reality, you would have been in a zombie movie, right? So that's amazing to me. That continues when you think about it to amaze me. And when you think about where we sit now and we're having this conversation and we have perspective, right? We have a perspective on this. That's amazing to me. That we, like, we can have a legitimate conversation about where we started, how we changed, how this thing has gone. That's astonishing. Like that it's become somewhat, it's now part of us. We're not just reacting to it. Like we have a plan. There's things that used to freak us out that you just do. You walk out of the house, you take your mask, you just have it, you put it on, you do a thing, you take it off. Like you walk in the house, you wash your hands, you do, like, there's stuff you do now that you don't even, that doesn't even register in your brain that would have felt like Martian stuff a year ago. And we don't think, that amazes me when I step back a little bit and go, oh, here every day, that we conduct business successfully without ever leaving a room. That companies who used to depend completely on thousands of people showing up at a building continue to do that work and nobody's in that building. That's amazing to me. So that kind of stuff, that ability to change and be adaptable is amazing. But you just can't believe how much has changed in how short a period of time. So that just, my final thought is just that perspective of how much things can change in with almost no warning.
Yeah, I think a lot of college students like me can very much empathize and agree with that mm-hmm. sitting there in March, hearing about it for the first time, and then having a semester and a half at home gives you a lot of perspective on enjoying your time at an academic institution and just being in the classroom.
Yeah. Being able to think in a moment, right? And to have our lives used to be compartmentalized. You could go to college and think about just that, right? It's that thing I'm saying. Like your worries were just that. And you still have those, work, I gotta do this for my class, you have all that. But you also have, and I've gotta do it from here. And is that Zoom thing gonna work? And am I gonna understand what I'm being told? And, with all the other stuff that's behind it, the virus stuff and the cumulative exhaustion of navigating this stuff, the little things, it's the little things that you like, it's a thousand little things. It's not even the one big thing, it's the thousand little things. Have your internet go out in the middle of something, right? Have your power be dicey. Have, just whatever, those things. I didn't understand that. I didn't hear that. Or I missed this. Or what do I have a question? Like just anything. They become so much harder to get your head around. And you're tired already. So those things, it's like death by a thousand cuts. Every once in a while just maxes out. And that is, it's true for everyone. There's a collective exhaustion.
Well, if that is your final thought,
yeah.
I thank you for your time and your willingness to share your experiences with me.
Absolutely. It was really good.
Thank you.
Thanks.